In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello everybody, my name is Stephen Robb, renewables editor with the Irish Farmers Journal, and you're all very welcome along to the Young Stock Podcast, the podcast by young journalists for young readers and listeners, kindly supported by Macra. So we're recording this podcast on Monday morning, the 20th of November, and yeah, look, we can safely say that winter is here. The stock are in, the ground is wet, growth has pretty much stopped, and field work has largely ground to a halt. Although in saying that, I did see some silage being cut around the country last week, which I can't get my head around. But look, what's everyone else up to who's listening on the podcast? What's going on the farm or indeed around the industry? And I want to hear from you, so get in touch with us on WhatsApp. Leave me a WhatsApp voice note on 086-836-64565. Or indeed, you can pop me an email at youngstock@farmersjournal.ie. So look, I suppose what's happening on my farm? Well, look, when I'm not on the road reporting on the latest renewable energy developments, this time of year, we generally focus on beet and potatoes. So beet's just getting going, but potatoes is well underway. Beet's going okay. Yields are pretty reasonable. Ground conditions are good. Potatoes, on the other hand, yeah, look, it's proven to be a bit of a tricky year up here in the northwest for spuds. We're not even halfway through the harvest just yet. Yields are okay, nothing wrong there. And quality, by and large, not too bad either. But it's just ground conditions. Ground conditions are just not great at the moment. So we're trying to grab any opportunity we can to get spuds out. Around the country, we would have seen the National Potato Conference held last week. And we would have heard that there's about 15% of the national potato area still to be harvested. So by and large, they're pretty much through down south. But look, lots of issues cropping up. Issues with quality, with scab, just all the symptoms of a dry season and then a wet back end. But have we any potato listeners listening to the podcast? If so, get in touch with us. I want to hear how you are getting on. So look, time to get on with the podcast. And what a show we have lined up for us again this week. As always, we're going to have the latest market prices, your key news stories of the week, and indeed the sustainability fact of the week. And of course, the big interview. So for the big interview this week, I caught up with Stephen Nolan, plant manager with Green Generation. So Stephen, well look, he's highly experienced in the area of anaerobic digestion. And he manages one of Ireland's leading AD plants, Green Generation in Newry Kildare. So we discuss everything from his career to date, the anaerobic digestion sector, and indeed the emerging opportunities in the industry. So look, guys, if you're interested in the area of anaerobic digestion, AD, and you want to see how it works and how it works on your farm, well, then this is one not to be missed. But first, it's over to Noel Barden. Noel, you're going to run through the key news stories of the week.
The big news this week is the upward movement in beef prices. An IFMA beef meeting in Portlaoise last week heard that quotes could hit 540 within weeks. Now, Teagasc were saying that around €6 a kilo is needed to leave winter finishers with a positive margin, but Dawn Meats didn't say that it saw that much of a rise as being likely, in the short term anyways. The Irish Natur and Hill Farmers Association, the INHFA, walked out of the Food Vision Beef Group after it called proposals put forward in the group's interim report as amounting to nothing less than a cull. The report recommended that beef numbers should be reduced by paying farmers to go down in suckler cows and to pay others to destock their sucklers entirely. From a young farmer's point of view, Mocra president John Keane said that there was obvious unhappiness in the group, and he called for constructive negotiations to take place on what had been put forward. That's following on, of course, from Mocra not backing the report when it was first sent to the minister just a couple of weeks ago. And then on the veterinary medicines front, we heard this week that the plans to introduce new prescription rules for antibiotics and doses have been pushed back from an original target of the 1st of December. Now, the minister did tell us that he wants the changes over the line by Christmas so that they could be in place for the new year. And that same piece of legislation that would see farmers needing a prescription to get a worm dose for cattle or sheep would see a fertiliser database set up to track how much fertiliser each farmer is buying into. So there's plenty of changes there in the pipeline with these new rules whenever they are put through both the Dáil and the Seanad. Plenty of changes coming up for farmers.
Thank you very much, Noel. Finger on the pulse as always. So look, now's a good time to plug the offer that we have in place for students. So any student who's listening can get a free digital sub or digital access to the Farmers Journal online, an absolute wealth of resources. And you can follow up on that offer through the Farmers Journal website and learn how to avail of it. So next up, Eileen Durkin is here with your sustainability fact of the week. But before we go any further, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Looking for somewhere to talk about all things farming? Then make sure to join Mochra na Fhorma. Our Ag Affairs Committee are always on top of the latest farming issues and want to hear what you have to say. But we're all about having the crack too, which is why we have plenty of events and competitions happening all the time. So what are you waiting for? Sign up to Mochra today and make sure to add the promo code PODCAST so you will be entered into a draw to win two tickets to a concert of your choice in the Three Arena. Sign up via our website, mochra.ie.
This week's Sustainability Fact of the Week is that rotations can make crop production more resilient by breaking disease, pest and weed cycles and improving crop nutrition. Both crop establishment systems and crop rotation have a key role to play in the development of sustainable crop production. Ireland's crop yield potential is supported by climate, soils, crop management and past rotations, which included grass. However, in the past 40 years, most of our cropping has been in monoculture and not included grass. As mentioned above, rotations can make crop production more resilient as they break disease, pest and weed cycles and also improve crop nutrition. While reduced cultivation systems may be faster and less expensive in comparison to plough-based systems, grass, weeds and wet soil conditions can present challenges. It is thought that combining rotations with reduced cultivation systems could have benefits. Research carried out in Teagasc Oak Park has quantified the impact of transitioning from monoculture to a rotation across four different cultivation systems. These were plough, shallow plough, lean-till and strip-till. It was found that break crops boosted yield in the subsequent cereal by 19% on average, with oats bringing the same benefit as oilseed rape. Out of the four cultivations tested, there is no significant yield difference between ploughing and lean-till in 5 out of 6 years tested under the system. However, strip tillage performed less well for a number of years, although it was thought that this was linked with crop type. Strip till resulted in a reduced yield in wheat and barley, but not oats.
Super stuff, Ellen. Thank you very much for that insight. So now it's time for this week's big interview. I caught up with Stephen Nolan, plant manager with Green Generation. Let's hear what he had to say. So, Stephen Nolan, thank you very much for joining us here on the Young Stock Podcast. I suppose to kick off here, Stephen, just very briefly, explain in a few sentences who you are, what do you do, where are you from, etc.
Yes, so, and thanks for having me on, Stephen. I appreciate it. So I'm Stephen Nolan from South Galway near Clarenbridge. I've been involved in agricultural stuff, the interface, I guess, of agriculture, renewable energy, greenhouse gas emissions, all that kind of stuff for about 15 years now.
Where I would have come across you, Stephen, mostly is in the AD space. And really, that's kind of going to form the basis of this conversation, because anaerobic digestion, it's hopefully going to take off soon. But look, I have to ask the question, especially for any of our listeners who wouldn't be overly aware. Explain to us what anaerobic digestion is. How does it work? And is it an operation anywhere in Ireland?
Sure. So anaerobic digestion is just the breakdown of organic material in the absence of oxygen. This is a natural process that happens in the environment, but you can do it in a controlled manner in a big tank, basically. It could be as simple as covering a slurry lagoon or tank, and you'll create that environment and get some gas off it. But you can optimize that process by applying heat and mixing and agitation. So any organic material can be broken down into gas, which is about 50 to 60% methane, and the rest of it is CO2. That gas can be used to power an engine, a combined heat and power unit, or it can be upgraded by removing the CO2 and made into biomethane, which can then be used as a transport fuel or injected into the national gas grid. The leftovers then from that process are kind of the consistency of dairy slurry, 6 to 8% solids, and it's a good fertilizer. Enriched fertilizer, essentially, compared with dairy or pig slurry. So
you're working on probably one of the most pioneering plants in the country.
Yeah, so I've been involved with Green Generation for a few years. The owners there, the Costellos, would have developed the plant kind of in the absence of real support or policy support, and have developed it out. It's based mostly on organic residues from food processors that can't be used for feed. And so it takes in about 23,000 tons of organic waste every year and produces electricity and biomethane, which then is injected into the national gas grid.
Okay, excellent. Look, we're going to get into Green Generation and the specifics of your role later on in the interview. But I suppose, first of all, so a lot of our listeners, Stephen, they're young professionals are either just out of college or are a little bit further on in their careers. And it's always useful to kind of delve back over people's education. What courses did they study and the reasons for studying them, and then post-grad, et cetera, et cetera. So just explain your college courses and college education.
Sure. So like a lot of lads that might have an interest in farming and agriculture, grew up doing a bit of farming over the years. But don't have a farm myself. I headed off to UCD to do ag science. Over time, sort of branched into environmental. So I did ag and environmental science at UCD. And a module in that was renewable energies. Maybe one single class out of the whole module was on anaerobic digestion at the time. It just made sense to me. So then after UCD, I went on to, I was doing a bit of agronomy work with a company based in Galway doing roads projects, so assessing the agronomic impact of roads. And then went back to college to do a master's in renewable energy systems in Dundalk IT. Again, I focused on anaerobic digestion because my interest was still in agricultural practices and optimizing those. And then I came back to Galway and found it hard enough to get any work. I was maybe a bit ahead of my time in anaerobic digestion for sure, but even in the renewable energy space. So did a bit of more work on roads projects with Philip Farley's. And then an opportunity came up to do a PhD on anaerobic digestion and optimizing it with the University of Galway. So I headed into that, and with a view for two things. I realized I didn't have a broad enough contact base or network. Very much did the PhD with a view to building and fleshing that out and building contacts and network around the industry, and then to learn more about anaerobic digestion and how it could be optimized.
Okay, that's interesting that you said that. I suppose why did you feel it was important to build out your network of contacts in the AD industry?
Well, it's a bit of a funny story. I was trying to get work in the field. You get work, of course, but getting it in something you're interested in was a bit harder. And I met a lad in the gym one day that I'd gone to school with, and when we left school, he'd gone selling tiles, which is legitimate work and good work. But he had moved and he was working for one of the companies that I was trying to get a job with. He hadn't gone to college, he hadn't done all those things, and so I asked him, how did he manage to get a job there? And he said he knows the owner's daughter. And so I realized at that point that it's still very much in Ireland who you know and needing to know people. So if there's one thing I could, I took away from that time was I needed to sort of spend more time developing that network.
That's brilliant. It's interesting because like the AD network, you know, back then wouldn't even have really existed, I would have thought, in Ireland.
So that was the broader renewable energy network at that time. I wasn't even trying to just specifically get into AD. I was trying to get something in renewable energy because that's what my master's was in. But even that, it was next to impossible to make connections.
Incredible how things have changed. And then I suppose, so from there, once you graduated with your doctorate, and probably I should have introduced you as Dr. Stephen Nolan, so apologies about that.
I won't hold you.
From there on, what was the next steps, I suppose, after you had completed your PhD?
Yeah, so during the course of the PhD, I started working with a small startup that my professor had set up at the time. Vincent O'Flaherty had set it up. And I was out giving a presentation on behalf of that company at an event in Tuam. And there was a man there, Billy Costello, who said to me, come up to me afterwards and said, so will you come and work for me? And I knew Billy from years before because he'd been trying to work to develop the AD industry. And I'd done some work with him on that. He now had a position to offer me because he'd set up his plant in the meantime. And so I went up and started working for him in Kildare.
Okay, and initially, would you have come in as plant manager, managing the operations, or what was the early kind of stages of your career in Green Generation?
So I wasn't in as plant manager. I was there to look at optimizing the use of the digestate, going out talking to farmers, explaining the value of it, explaining when it should be applied to get the best use out of it, trying to reduce the costs to Green Generation of shipping it to farmers, because at that time nobody understood or believed that the value that was in the digestate itself in terms of a fertilizer value. So that was very much my focus at the start. I was interested though from the PhD and on the optimization of the process itself and trying to get more gas out of the system. So over time that role developed, and when the opportunity came up to manage the plant, I was asked to do that.
Okay, a few things to go on here then. So Green Generation, they would have, I suppose, rose to national fame as such whenever they became the first AD plant to inject biomethane into the national gas grid. Can you just explain how that came about and the process that was involved in it?
We have the only grid injection point in the country for renewable gas. So when you see the ads on TV for renewable gas, that's coming from our point there. It took a while to develop. It was developed with Gas Networks Ireland, and this is still very much in collaboration with Gas Networks Ireland there on daily interactions with them with that. It was developed with some funding money came available for that, and I don't think without that it could have been developed. So that's a takeaway there, but there's a lot of troubleshooting and a lot of figuring it out because it hadn't been done before in Ireland. But I think a lot of that hard work is done now, and I think Gas Networks Ireland themselves are looking to develop grid injection points around the country. I think Mitchelstown is probably the most developed or furthest ahead of those plans. But yeah, hopefully soon we'll have a good few injection points around the country.
Green Generation itself, just to have it clear in my head, the majority of the feedstock which they take in is food waste, but there's also agricultural waste in there as well.
You'll have to excuse the rain is hammering down on the roof here over my head. But a lot of the waste organic residues from food producers. That's the primary source of the waste we take in. So we work with any of the big food producers around Kildare especially, and further afield around the country. And if they have leftovers or waste products, we take that in. We work with Tesco, so all of their unsold food. Well, it goes preferentially to Food Cloud if it can be used for charity. And any that can't comes to us. We depackage it and process it. We take in some residues, so sort of in between there is we take in some ballygrass from an abattoir, and then we take in pig slurry. There's a pig slurry next door, so we take in pig slurry from that as well.
I suppose that would be fairly different to what you would class as an agricultural plant, wouldn't it? Because you would have to have other equipment, depackaging and kind of pre-processing equipment before any of the feedstock would enter the tank, wouldn't it?
It's far more complicated than the standard agricultural plant that might be processing slurry and grass. It's far more labor intensive, which is expensive. It's different. The principle is the same. The idea is the same. You put the food waste in and you get gas out. The management of it is a lot more complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention the people power, you know, the staff requirements as such to operate that facility compared to, you know, a smaller, maybe agricultural plant.
Yeah, we have about 50 staff on site there at the moment. There's a lot to it, yeah.
But even beyond that, I mean, Green Generation just would have developed, if I'm correct in saying, recycling method for the waste, for the packaging waste, and you're now actually using that in products, am I right in saying?
Yeah, so we have a sister company called Paltech, and they developed it's a one-of-a-kind kind of technology. We're the only people in Europe doing it and possibly in the world, but for this kind of plastic packaging, it's mixed. So there could be five different types of plastic in the packaging that comes off the food waste, slightly contaminated with some food residues. And so we developed a system for washing that, shredding it and drying it and making it into a flake that can be used to produce plant pots, which are being sold in Tesco at the moment, or drinkers for cattle, which are under development. And there's a range of products, site barriers and different things, big bulky products that can take up a lot of this plastic that otherwise would just go for incineration. Yeah, so that's been a separate stream, and it's been good to develop that out. And there's a factory now doing that in Clara, specifically focused on the plastic side of it. Yeah, that's
incredible. So it's as good of a circular economy model as you're going to find in Europe. Yeah, anyway.
Everything that goes in comes out it's upcycled. Essentially, it comes out as gas, or it comes out as fertilizer, or else it comes out as a plastic product. The cardboard that comes into us gets recycled. Same with the glass. So it's a fully circular approach in that sense. So.
Like whatever, there's commentary around aerobic digestion. You know, a lot of the focus is around, you know, the tanks and the feeding and the digestion and the feedstock and whatnot. And there's probably not enough attention given to what actually goes on within the tank itself, especially in terms of the biology and the interactions and the environmental requirements and whatnot. I suppose that's an area that you've specialised in, and hasn't it? Just give us an indication of how important due care and diligence as such is to biology within the tanks, and maybe, you know, the different stages of the anaerobic digestion process, just to give our listeners an indication of what's involved.
There's four broad stages, and they happen sequentially. So, but they're all happening at the same time because it's just a big tank. They're all happening at the same time. The first is hydrolysis, where the big molecules, the big apple that you throw in, is broken down to its constituent parts. So whether that be carbohydrates or proteins or sugars, or they're broken down in the first stage. The second stage is kind of this fermentation, smaller molecules, the sugars and carbohydrates or proteins are broken down further into, they're acidified. So they're broken into acids, volatile fatty acids. And then the third stage is where those acids are converted to acetic or acetate and hydrogen and maybe some CO2. And then the fourth stage is where the methanogenic archaea, the methanogenic bugs, consume acetic acid and consume hydrogen and make methane. If that system becomes unbalanced, so if the guys that are doing the work at the start making the volatile fatty acids, if they're dominating and making a lot of volatile fatty acids, you can reduce the pH in the system, which will kill the methanogenic bugs. Conversely, if you don't have enough volatile fatty acids being made and the methanogens aren't, they're sitting there waiting for volatile fatty acids to be made, they can become underutilized as well. So what I've run into, so three of the plants around the country have gone in at different stages. There's eight to 10 operational plants in the country, and three of them have gone to me at different stages where they've overloaded the system and they're now in crisis mode, and you can recover a system easy enough if you know what you're doing, but you don't want to get into that place where you've killed off all the bugs that do one big part of the job, which is making the gas. What I find as well in a lot of plants is that it's completely underfed, so the operators are so afraid of overfeeding it that actually the system is really inefficient because it's underfed. So it's important to understand the dynamics there and go into that in detail, but also just to balance that and not be so afraid of overfeeding that you underutilize your system, because it's expensive kit and there's no point having it only doing 60 or 70% of what it could be doing. But it's also, you do need to be wary of overfeeding. Yeah.
From a manager's point of view, I mean, how do you actually manage that? How do you see that? How do you find out that information, that breakdown between the different colonies and populations of bugs in the tank?
So there's a very simple test that can be done, which is done in most of the AD plants around the country now. It's called a FOSTAC test, which is the balance of the FOS part is these volatile fatty acids, and the TAC part is the buffering capacity of the system. And you run a little test, you take a sample and you run a little test. It's a simple test and it gives you a number at the end, which is your FOS-TAC ratio. There's a good range for that, which is roughly 0.35. It doesn't matter, but you try and get it sitting near that range. If it's way over that, then your system is overfed. And if it's way under that, or if it's under that at all, your system's probably underfed. We do that test every day. The general operative there can do that test and ping on the number. And if it's safe enough to just adjust your feeding slightly, then if you're gone slightly high, you'll pull your feeding back a bit. And if you're under, you can push your feeding on a bit. So sounds complicated when you start talking about it, but in reality, with just a little bit of attention and care, it's not the hardest part of managing a plant, for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I'd love to get into a hell of a lot more detail on that, and maybe we'll come back to it, maybe as the industry begins to develop. But I suppose in the interest of time, Stephen, we'll move on. So we will. Yeah. I suppose that gives us a good insight there into green generation and your role as such. If we just step back a moment before we do, I just want to say that's only, I suppose, one component of your day-to-day job. The other component is R&D, and we spoke before we started recording. You said R&D is actually a large part of your day-to-day job. Now, can you just go into that a wee bit for us?
Like I said, the system is typically inefficient. These big tanks that are built, they're standard across the industry. So you build a big tank and you put some mixers in it and you fill it up with stuff and you have long retention times, and it's easy enough to manage, relatively easy to manage, and that's how it's done at the moment. But there are definitely, in academia, there are ways of doing it better that have been developed, but they haven't quite made it to industry level yet. So a big interest of mine is kind of bridging that gap between what's being done in the universities and bringing that into industry. So we have work ongoing with University of Galway, University of Limerick, UCD, Trinity, any of the colleges around that are interested in anaerobic digestion have work ongoing with us. So there's some really good Irish research going on that will push on the field for sure. And so I guess having been at Green Generation, that gives me an opportunity to be involved in that different research. So it's interesting work for sure.
Yeah, incredible. Fantastic. Just stepping back then from your role in Green Generation, and let's just look at the wider AD industry. I mean, we have some really ambitious targets for Indigenous biomethane production in Ireland by 2030. I think the figure is 5.7 terawatt hours. I suppose considering we're coming from such a low base, what's your thoughts on this? You know, is it achievable for us to go from practically zero to well over 200 plants by 2030?
I don't see it happening. I wish I wasn't saying that, but I don't see it happening. I hope to be proven wrong in that. I've spoken with farmers who are trying to get planting permission and are being held up mostly by people who don't understand or don't care to understand the benefits of anaerobic digestion. So a lot of people trying to get permission are now being held up in on board planola with different objections. Also spoken to farmers who have planted permission and would like to go ahead and build their plant. They can't get funding. We heard recently at a conference organized by the Renewable Gas Forum of Ireland that there's this wall of funding was the quote that was there. But
yeah.
10 minutes later, I had a discussion with a farmer who said he hasn't seen it and he doesn't know how to access it. So maybe it's a case that the money is there, but it's not being explained how to access it. But I don't know. Once you get planning and you start to build a plant, you're probably looking at 2 years realistically before it becomes operational. If there's a 3 year wait on planning and a 2 year wait on becoming operational, that brings us to 2027, 2028, really. That's for guys that are kind of ready to go right now. I know GNI have an expression of interest type meeting. I know there's a lot of interest in AD, but going from being interested in it to getting planning in and doing all that, even if 200 applications were prepared in the next year and went in, I think it will be, yeah, difficult to achieve that target. Although, and the main reason for that actually is because there's no funding, there's no guaranteed basic minimum price for your energy, so banks can't bankroll it because they have no guarantees that their outputs will be secure for 15 years. So any other jurisdiction that has provided some sort of guaranteed minimum price for, at the time it was electricity, but now the focus is on biomethane. The industry developed pretty quickly. There's an appetite there and then the funding piece makes sense. So Northern Ireland's the good example of that. Probably 90 plants up there now. And we have, like I said, 8 or 10 here, so we're way behind. But it's been the same thing for 10 or 15 years. The government has pointed at Germany, which brought in a tariff for electricity. That led to some trouble with maize being used as the main feedstock, taking some land out of food production. Nobody here is proposing that. Nobody here is proposing converting land to growing crops specifically for AD. The rhetoric has been that there's grassland available if we improved our dry matter yield from the existing grassland base that we have from maybe 4 to 5 tons per hectare to 10 or 12 tons per hectare, which can be done in some places, then there will be more grass available. But for sure, we have 38 million tons of slurry. I think off the top of my head, maybe 40 million tons of slurry in Ireland that could be used for AD if you just leave aside the grass for a minute. And so centralized plants processing maybe 100,000 tons of slurry and then redistributing the fertilizer to the source farms. That's being done in Denmark and different countries, and it could be done here. It would help to have additional inputs. If you have additional grass silage available, then great. Some organic residues, like there's 800,000 tons of organic waste in Ireland, roughly. I think maybe 100,000, maybe 150,000 goes to AD, and the rest either goes up north to AD or goes to composting. And so as long as we're putting 600,000 tons of organic waste into composting, we'll never get there either. But if that organic waste was made available, that could develop the industry faster as well. So there's a few things that need to happen, I think, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility that in 10, 15 years time we have a good strong AD industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's the funding element, an interesting one, and the funding mechanism. The simplest way to mitigate any risk of crops being grown for AD, which I, as a tillage farmer, I have absolutely nothing against whatsoever, But if the government were cautious of it, the simplest way to do it is to structure the payments in such a manner that, you know, you're paid more for gas produced from waste and slurry than gas produced from, you know, 50-50 crop to slurry or 100% crop or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an operation in other jurisdictions. You know, it's really an operation in the north if you look hard enough. So it's not groundbreaking.
No, it's built into RED 2 as well. So if you use slurry in AD, you get a bonus for it, or if you use agricultural residues and manure and different things, you get a bonus for that. And so that's factored into the price. When you go back to carbon credit certification and all that, you have to be using residues or waste, or else it counts against you. So it's there. You just need to guarantee a price for the sustainable gas and then let the industry kind of develop from that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Another piece just you mentioned as well in the early days of your career of Green Generation was digestate. I suppose, have you seen, whenever you first approached those farmers, like, were they cautious of the digestate? Did they come around once they've seen the benefits of using it? And, you know, what are you seeing today in terms of digestate demand?
It's an interesting one. So the lads around Kildare would be well used to using pig slurry from the farm. I think there's a few elements. They were used to getting the pig slurry for nothing because they knew the pig farm had to get rid of it. While they understood that there's a value, a nutrient value in the digestate and in the pig slurry, when they've been getting it free for so long that they didn't want to start contributing towards the cost of it, I guess. The other part of it was, some people were lashing on digestate on a hot day with the sun scorching down, and that would volatilize ammonia more than it should. And so there was a bit of burning of grass. Mm-hmm. But over time, just working with lads, so applying it to a growing crop on a kind of using low emission spreading approaches. Yeah, there's lads now that have completely eliminated chemical fertilizer and are just using digestate to grow tillage, grass across the board. And what they're finding is the first year they get a notable benefit from it, but over time that improves as the nitrogen in the digestate breaks down over time. So maybe 50% of it is immediately available and the rest kind of releases over time. It's a kind of a slow release. So it's an excellent fertilizer. It has to be pasteurized to 70 degrees for an hour on any plant that's processing animal byproducts. So it's clean in that sense. The pathogen risk is drastically reduced compared with unprocessed slurry. Because you've captured some of the greenhouse gas emissions from it, it's better environmentally, obviously. And it's easy to apply with any machinery that you would have used for spreading slurry. So on several
levels. Smell, Stephen, any issues with smell?
If you're used to pig slurry, it's not nearly as bad as pig slurry. So a lot of the odor is kind of odorous compounds are removed in the gas and captured in that sense. I don't think it smells, but maybe I've been around it too long. But for sure, if you're used to pig slurry or even cattle slurry, it's not nearly as intense as that.
Yeah.
Especially if you're spreading it on sort of a damp, dull day, there's not much volatilization of ammonia. It's not smelly, no.
Right, Stephen, we're coming towards the end of the interview now. I want to keep it relatively sharp. Look, in terms of your job, what would you say is the best part about your career, your job?
Getting to do something that I think is useful. Generally, there's a lot of talk about climate and greenhouse gases and all that. Getting to do something that's genuinely is addressing some of these big problems, that's fulfilling. Being able to optimize that then and develop it and push it on, if I can contribute to that, I think that would be a good success.
Fantastic. Okay. And then my last question for you, Stephen, is kind of a two-parter as such. For someone who is considering getting into AD themselves, as in from a developer point of view, so any of our farmers who are listening, or maybe a feedstock supplier, where do they start? Quite a big question on itself. But the second part of the question is, for anyone looking to get into the AD industry as their career, not as a developer, but in the industry, what would be your top tips for them?
Yeah, it's the same answer for both. Go to an AD plant. If you are early in your career, do an internship or ask for a job or just get your foot in the door on any AD plant. There's several of them dotted around the country. Get your foot in the door, get to understand the business. It's more than just managing the system. There's paperwork and there's a whole other side of it that you don't realize until you're in the door. I would say just commit to it. It's something I never knew about. I only found out about internships, crazy and all as that might sound, later on in life. So go in and do an internship or just take a job at whatever level is available and get in the door and learn. That's the best way to learn, for sure. Like, there's a lot of researchers and different people working on AD. I'd say the same thing to them. Fine, do the lab work and do it at that scale, but get into a real AD plant and visit it and ask questions. And so it's the same for anyone thinking of developing an AD plant. Visit as many of them as you can in all different places. AD operators, for the most part, are happy to bring people in and show them around and develop the industry and promote it. So yeah, just, it's the same answer for both. Just get in the door and get to see what it's like and ask questions from the operators and learn that way. Yeah.
Okay, Stephen, solid advice there for anybody interested in the sector. So look, we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. But Stephen, look, thank you very much for having a chat to us. It was a great insight.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on, Stephen.
And that was Stephen Nolan, an absolutely super insight into the AD industry. Look, I think the AD industry, once it ticks off, it's going to be revolutionary for Irish agriculture. We have massive targets to meet across 17 different policies, not just our emission reduction targets by 2030. And I think AD can tick the box of all of those. It's no silver bullet. There is no such thing as a silver bullet when it comes to climate change and renewable energy production, but it's certainly going to go a long way to meet those targets. So look, anyone who's interested in AD or wants to have a chat, look, you can always give me a call at any stage or drop me an email at srob@farmersjournal.ie. So look, time to move on here. So our next stop is our very own Martin Merrick, who's going to give us the latest prices in the marts as of Monday morning, the 28th of November. Take it away, Martin.
Hi folks, and welcome again to Martin's Markets. Now all our prices are correct as of the 28th of November 2022. Now kicking off this week with our sheep price report. Last week we saw prices of 20 to 30 cent kg increase in lamb prices, resulting in a high percentage of producers trading within a price range of 660 to 670 kg. Now top prices paid to producer group members, including lamb confirmation bonuses, and sellers handling large numbers are rising to 675 to 680 kg. Factories have been more open to offering higher weight allowances rather than price increases over the past number of weeks. Almost all plants are paying to 22.5 kg of a carcass weight when pushed to it by sellers with good bargaining power, while those trading at the top of the markets are, in cases, securing 23 kg carcass weight and allowances for transport. There's also a lot of talk in the trade of specialist finishers offering numbers of lambs in the hundreds rather than the tens, negotiating returns of 690 to 7 euro kg. At the other end of the market, some factories are trying to open quotes at 650 a kg for quality assured lambs, but the reality is there's more going even for producers with lower negotiating power. In the beef section, a positive week in the bullock ring saw nearly all weight categories see a price lift, but it was most apparent for stores ranging 470 to 520 kg, up almost 10 cent kilo on the week previous. Now, it leaves the average price paid for a 4 to 500 kg bullock at 241 a kilo, while those ranging from 5 to 600 kgs average 251 a kilo. The top third of bullocks are commanding 30 to 40 cent kg above the average price paid. In the weigh-ins, the number of weigh-ins on offer over the past number of weeks has been dwindling. However, the prices are very dependent on the quality of the animal being put forward. Where quality is high, even at lighter weights, there is strong demand for stock. There was a big price lift last week in the bull weigh-ins over 400 kg. However, overall numbers in this weight bracket remain small. At lighter weights, trade is slightly easier than the previous week. The average price paid for a 300 to 400 kg bull weighing was 269 a kilo, while heifers of the same weight averaged 262 a kilo. At lighter weights, heifers from 2 to 300 kgs are averaging about 260 kilo. However, across both heifers and bulls, the top third of stock are still commanding prices well in excess of €3 a kilo.
Great stuff, Martin. Thank you very much, as always. Well, folks, that's it for another week of the Young Stock Podcast. And as always, we'll be back next Monday. Quick word of thanks to our sponsors, Macra, for their support. And of course, to you, the listeners, for listening and keeping us all in a job here in the Farmers Journal by reading the paper. My name is Stephen Robb, renewables editor with the Farmers Journal. And until next time, stay safe.